Hello everyone, it's Mark Goodacre here. Welcome to the NT Pod, a podcast all about the New Testament and Christian origins. It's episode 48, and today we're asking, why study the historical Jesus? It's the beginning of a new semester here at Duke University at the time of recording this podcast, which is January 2011. And this semester I'm teaching a course I've taught several times before on the historical Jesus. It's one of my favourite courses to teach. And when I begin the classes, I always want to ask the question right at the beginning of the course and say, why do it? Why study the historical Jesus? What's the point? What earthly purpose are we serving people by doing it? I mean, this semester I'm teaching in a chemistry classroom and I've got huge periodic tables of the elements up on the side of the classroom, and that serves as a useful reminder to me of other subjects that go on in the university that are probably of a bit more practical use than the historical Jesus. But I do think there is a good defense that can be made for teaching the historical Jesus and learning about the historical Jesus, and I'll spell out some of the reasons that I think it is something worthwhile doing. I think that to begin with, the New Testament text actually in some way invites you to do the work of studying the historical Jesus, because you don't open the New Testament and just see one portrait of Jesus. What you see is Matthew's Jesus, Mark's Jesus, Luke's Jesus, John's Jesus. And then when you get to Paul's letters, you see, as we've been discussing recently on the NT Pod, little hints about Jesus. And then when we look outside of the Bible, we see all these interesting non-canonical texts, which then cause us to raise the question, well, could they contain information about Jesus? And those sorts of questions inevitably make the historian, the academic, curious, because you want to compare and contrast and say, well, is this document a little bit more reliable than this one? Has this tradition and this document got more for it than another one? And so there's something about the nature of the New Testament that actually encourages you into the work of doing historical study. It's something of a truism, of course, that there is the historical Jesus, but also the Christ of faith, and that you can't read the gospel text without seeing the Easter memories impacting directly on the way that the evangelists portray Jesus. But at the same time, it's important to remind ourselves that the historical Jesus isn't someone who... The term historical is the important term here. I mean, I sometimes use the synonym the historian's Jesus to remind ourselves what we're actually doing when we're looking at the historical Jesus. The historical Jesus is essentially a modern creation. He's someone that only people... that people have only become interested in over the last couple of hundred years or so. And the kind of definition that I give of this historian's Jesus, the historical Jesus, is to say that the historical Jesus is the critical historian's construction of Jesus's life based on the analysis of the ancient historical text. It's critical historical study of ancient texts and context. So little things like archaeology come into it as well when you're looking at the context. But it's something that's the work of ancient history. It's something where moderns are going back and constructing what they think is going on in those texts and recreating something and trying to capture a little picture of the past. I mean, some scholars even want to try and distinguish between the historical Jesus, the historian's Jesus, and the real Jesus, as if to emphasize that we don't have any pipeline that will take us back and give us direct access to the real Jesus that walked around in Galilee in the 20s or the early 30s, whenever it was. And so they'll say the historical Jesus is a figure which always someone that's constructed, conjured up by the historian's imagination. And we shouldn't be ashamed of that. We shouldn't be ashamed of the fact that this is work that historians are doing. But anyway, let's get to our real focus and let's ask the question, why should we spend time studying this figure? And one very obvious answer to this is to say that he is a figure who is of cultural significance to us still. I mean, It's amazing to me to think that it's now some time since the millennium, because that still seems quite recent to me, and I was already teaching courses on Jesus around about the time of the millennium. And it's an interesting fact that around about 1996 or so, people started realizing that we were getting to 2,000 years since the possible roundabout rough date of Jesus's birth, and that in some senses the millennium was his 2,000th birthday. And so publishers started saying, oh goodness, you know, let's try and get some books out on Jesus and cash in on the you know, on this kind of big millennial moment. And some of those books even had the millennium in their titles. You get books talking about Jesus as a millennial prophet and trying to emphasize that kind of apocalyptic eschatological nature of the historical Jesus. And even though that moment of millennium has now gone by, it's still something that has kind of lingered on, that kind of fascination in Jesus that really kind of burst into activity in the 90s. I mean, really just suddenly a proliferation of books on him. I mean, I'm not saying that the historical Jesus as a subject of study was only invented round about the time of the millennium. No, it goes back much further than that. But I think that there was something about that millennial moment that caused a real resurgence of interest in the historical Jesus, building on a lot of the newer work that had been done on the historical Jesus in the previous generation or so. I mean, people talk now about the third quest of the historical Jesus, but the key thing in contemporary studies of the historical Jesus is there's been a lot of stress on Jesus in his Jewish context, and that's something which has itself fueled something of an interest in the historical Jesus, because we live in a post-Holocaust society in which Jewish-Christian relations have, to some extent, taken on a kind of a new life by people reflecting on the life of the historical Jesus. As soon as people realized that Jesus was not a Christian, as soon as people realized that Jesus was a Jew, I mean, Geza Vermesh wrote this book in 1973 called Jesus the Jew, and I remember as a child seeing this in my parents' house, and I saw all these kind of little stars of David over the front, and I thought, Jesus the Jew, what an interesting title that is. And that kind of characterizes a lot of work that's recently been done on Jesus, that they've stressed the Jewish context of so much of what you can see going on in the Gospels. And that feeds into, I think, some of that interest in Jewish-Christian relations, that exploration of the shared heritage and at the same time the exploration of something that is shared or overlapping between those two religions. And it's not, of course, just Jewish-Christian relations that this is relevant to. Christian-Muslim relations also becomes something of interest when you're talking about the historical Jesus, because Jesus is a prophet who's found in the Quran. And inevitably, when you're looking at those accounts in the Quran, you find yourself asking historical questions. You know, what basis is there in those texts for the for what they're saying? And so that also raises questions. And so Christian Muslim relations is also interested in this topic of the historical Jesus. But I think one of the reasons for the continued interest in the historical Jesus, especially that continued interest amongst Christians, is for a theological reason. Now, slight warning here, slight sort of red flag kind of alert kind of moment. I'm not really a proper theologian. I've got a degree in theology from Oxford, and I worked in a theology and religion department for many years in Birmingham. So I know some stuff about theology, but I'm not so good at doing the theology stuff as I am at doing the history stuff. So this has to come with a little warning. Nevertheless, I'll have a go. The thing about the quest of the historical Jesus is that it can also be something of theological relevance and theological importance within Christianity. Because after all, Christianity is an incarnational religion. It's a religion in which you've got a figure at its heart who, the claim of Christianity, one of the chief claims of it, is that he is God made flesh. And that is a kind of historical claim, or at least it's a claim that involves someone that was doing something at a particular moment in history. And studying the historical Jesus can be something of importance to those theologians who are interested in studying the incarnation. It's inevitably going to be something that connects with it. I don't see how you can have that kind of historical claim or claim about something that happened in history without then subsequently showing some interest in the historical Jesus. So that's my little tiny attempt at a little bit of a theological point. But back to more comfortable territory for me. I think one shouldn't make any apologies for doing history. History is fascinating. History is interesting. History is often enigmatic, and it teaches you all sorts of interesting things about the ancient world that will give you something for sustained development and reflection, and you know, help you to see all sorts of other subjects in interesting different ways, develop your critical faculties and so on. And I think the thing is that there really shouldn't be any defence necessary for doing history, especially, I suppose, when it's history that in some way relates to a figure of such cultural, religious, theological significance as Jesus. So I think that might be enough reasons to say it's worth spending a bit of time looking at the historical Jesus. There's something rewarding about studying this figure, and it's something that I'll enjoy spending a little bit more time talking about in the next few weeks in several forthcoming NT pods. Well, thanks for listening to the latest episode of the NT Pod. You can find me on the web at podacre.blogspot.com, on Facebook at NT Pod, Twitter at NT Pod, or you can follow me at Goodacre, or you can find me on Duke University's iTunes U or iTunes itself. It's always good to have your company. Thanks for listening, and I'll be with you again soon. Goodbye.